Falling.
Hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5015. Bill Scott, the director, is here again. Welcome back to the committee. And would you like to introduce your witnesses, please?
Thank you, sir. For the record, I'm Bill Scott, the director of the Oregon Economic Development Department. And I wanted to begin maybe by just today we're basically covering the international trade division and the international division of the department, and I wanted to orient the committee as to where that is in the budget and the organization chart. And yesterday we were on the Community Development Fund. This is one green tab back from that. And the tab is called Program Services. If you'll recall, there's a total of seven sections of our budget. One of them is Program Services. That includes the funding for the staff of the and offices of the International Trade Group or International Division. If you look on page one behind that tab, I'll give you time to get there. Okay. Finding a green tab program should be the first one behind where we were yesterday. The Community Development Fund is the next green tab.
Okay. All right.
Okay, and the first page behind that shows we've kind of grouped the sections here into four sections, and one of those, as you can see, is international. So that's kind of where we are in the budget. And then if you go back two pages from there to page three is the organization chart for the department. And you can see the box on the far left is international. You can see it has 14 FTE, and there's a program option package for another two FTE, and that will be presented today. And just for a little further orientation, if you go two more pages to page five, this is just to go back to the old familiar pie chart of the budget. This is the program services section of that pie chart. It's quite a bit narrower black wedge there. And then on page six, to go through the lottery appropriation on page six, where we have all the summaries of the lottery, you'll see we've highlighted the program services tab that shows you how we got the calculation of current service level. And the one funded program option package there is the $200,000 for international division staffing and overseas activity. The staffing is actually not in the governor's budget. We're going to keep the two positions, but the $200,000 will be explained later today is for additional activity in initiating and investigating overseas operations. Then if you go from there, you'll see that the next tab is a white tab, and it says international, and that's where we kind of separate out the international portion of the budget. And I don't know if Warren's going to be using these pages, but I'll just show you what you have here. On the first page, there's a description generally of the of what the division does, as well as a list of the International Trade Commission members. I guess the next page is what the commission does. The next page is what the division does, the staff does, and then page three is a description of the program option package, and page four is a separate breakout of the actual dollars in the program services part of the budget for the full four offices of the international group.
The three offices.
Well, three overseas plus Portland, right? So that's basically the materials that are in your book for this. Your presentation today is going to be made by Warren Banks, who is the manager of the... We have a little bit different nomenclature because of our international partners are used to certain words. And so, actually, I think Warren Card is director of the International Trade Division of the department. But he's basically the team leader for the international group. He will be introducing the chair and some of the members of the International Trade Commission, as well as some of the industry partners that the division has been working with. And I'll be here available, but I think I'll excuse myself and let Warren and his commissioners make the presentation.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Williams, welcome back.
Thank you, Senator. Nice to be back.
Chair Hannon and members of the committee, before Bill said, the manager of the International Division of Oregon Economic Development Department. Before I begin my presentation, I'd like to just briefly preview our agenda, which is also behind me here on the whiteboard. Hopefully you can read it. I will introduce our division in terms of the background, importance of trade to the state, our mission, priorities, and alignment with new directions. Then the International Trade Commission, in the personage of Bill Williams, will make a summary presentation of their recommendations, which came out in their biennial report. I will then continue with our delivery systems, which will include how we relate to our partners, and a short brief on our overseas offices. Following this will be presentations from three of our partners, the Oregon Bioscience Association, Northwest Environmental Business Council, and Software Association of Oregon. I will then conclude briefly with a short list of current plans for the next biennium. Our program is really international trade development. The International Division has been an integral part of Economic Development Department since 1973. The focus of our division has changed over the years to meet the changing needs of our clients and the impacts of growing world trade. And I would just draw your attention to our 1988 breakdown of industries, not by countries, but you can see, for example, if you went back probably 10 or 15 years, wood products would be a substantial portion, whereas now that's been replaced by high technology. Agriculture, of course, which we don't cover, but nonetheless is still a very important part of the state's exports, wood products, and all other exports. The and you can see also on here where we are at 54%, almost 55% in high-tech exports versus the U.S. Average of 40%. So this high-tech sector is a very important aspect in terms of exports to the state of Oregon. It's important to look ahead. I think that in Oregon Shines 2, four factors were identified by the 1996 Oregon Shines Task Force as critical to assuring Oregon's continued success. The first is a value-adding, diversified, export-driven economy. This morning I will show exports are important to the economy and help to diversify it. The revised Oregon Shines strategic goals are: first, quality jobs for all Oregonians, and as a sub-goal, one of the goals is more Oregon companies will export higher-value products, which, of course, all of these are. Even in the wood products industries, those are value-added products. Secondly, a strategic goal of Oregon Shines is a safe, caring, and engaged communities, and thirdly, healthy, sustainable surroundings. Exports directly impact quality jobs for all Oregonians. Simply put, jobs with companies engaged in international business pay more than companies not engaged in international business. Exporting companies are also better able to survive downturns in local and national economies. This leads to sustainability. And of course, healthy companies with high-paying jobs do indeed contribute to safe, caring, and engaged communities. International trade adds value and diversity to Oregon's economy as it opens new markets for Oregon's products and services. Companies engaged in exporting are also more than 20% more productive than their non-exporting counterparts. This is no accident. In order to compete internationally, they must have a superior workforce, and competing internationally helps them develop superior products and a workforce. The governor's priorities and the department's strategies and goals, as encapsulated by New Directions, are consistent with the strategic goals of Oregon Shines 2. Our division's activities support these priorities, strategies, and goals. Currently, one in five jobs in Oregon are related to international business and trade. These jobs are found in nearly every industry in Oregon and throughout the state. For the year ending 1997, Oregon ranked 29th in population among states, 28th in gross national product, but 8th in total exports as a percent of gross state product, and 10th in exports per capita. Given this information, international business and trade does not have high visibility among the citizens of the state, unfortunately. Nor is this lack of understanding about the impact of international business and trade unique to our state. Many of my counterparts in other states report a similar phenomenon. Since 1991, Oregon exports have grown 92% to $9.8 billion in 1998, 50% more than the 61% growth realized by the United States as a whole. In Oregon, the value of exports attributable to small and medium-sized companies is 58% of the total, whereas the national level, it is 39%, an indication that indeed small and medium-sized companies in Oregon are exporting during this same period. In Oregon, it is a myth that only large companies export.
Emily?
Well, do we have a copy of such a meeting?
You do not.
I do
know.
Can we have a copy afterwards?
Certainly.
How about the drafts? You can determine the drafts themselves. Are they sufficient somewhere in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, they are not, but we can get you the drafts. They are in this, which is in part of your handout, as is much of the information I talked about. Representative Butler, we'll have those brought over before the end of the hearing. The percentage of manufactured exports to total manufactured shipments increased from 9.1% in 1987 to 16.5% in 1988, another indication that exporting is indeed becoming an integral part of Oregon's economy. In short, we are making substantial progress toward internationalizing the products and services sold by our businesses. And as world trade will resume to a growth rate of double the gross national product growth, or 6%, those companies engaged in international trade in general will grow faster than their domestic counterparts. The main purpose or mission of the International Division is to help small and medium-sized export-ready businesses take advantage of export opportunities in the international market. Therefore, one of our primary activities of the division is to offer opportunities in industry-specific trade shows, conferences, buyer's missions, technical seminars, and other forums in and for key markets of opportunity. The goals are to increase the number of companies exporting, open new markets for existing exporters, and increase the percentage of companies exporting to new markets, which ultimately affects the percentage of manufactured goods sold outside the United States. It should be stressed that while we offer increased opportunities for companies to expand their exports, and indeed during the past 2 years this is more true than ever before, we cannot force them to export. 89% of Oregon companies have fewer than 20 employees. This puts constraints on their resources and ability to grow rapidly. These companies can only take on and digest a finite number of new opportunities in any given time frame. Therefore, as has been stated so well by the International Trade, Trade Commission, Oregon's companies into new markets is a very long-term proposition, which shows results measured over several years, often spanning biennia. While providing opportunities to export is our primary function, emphasis on awareness of global competitiveness issues cannot be overstated. 75% of all business in the United States has foreign competition. The full awareness of this competition helps make Oregon companies better competitors at home and in international markets. Our customers then are Oregon's exporting businesses and organizations interested in assisting companies to develop exports and export markets. How does the international division fit in the department's new directions? Let me recap. We assist Oregon businesses. We assist ready-to-export companies, primarily small and medium-sized, in virtually all industries throughout the entire state. Companies which otherwise might not participate in the export growth of the state. We do this directly and through and with a growing number of partnerships with other organizations such as the Small Business International Trade Program, Small Business Development Centers, and Chambers of Commerce. We also have close intra-agency and inter-agency linkages such as with tourism, business development, and the Department of Agriculture. We have increased our commitments to partners and businesses located outside the Portland metropolitan area. We assist Oregon communities. Exports help create new high-wage jobs from a superior workforce. In turn, this leads to a diversified economy and stronger, more diverse communities. Now I would like to turn to the International Trade Commission, which will give an overview of its work during the biennium. The biennial report of the International Trade Commission will be coming shortly, and earlier in this year, all legislators did receive a copy. The International Trade Commission was established in 1995 by the Legislative Assembly. Its 9 members are appointed by the governor, with 1 of the members coming from the Economic Commission and 2 ex officio members from the legislature appointed by the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House. Senator Lim is one of the ex officio members. The major requirement for the committee was to produce a report for the Economic Development Commission, which in turn made its report to the Legislative Assembly. Here to give you a brief overview of its accomplishments is Bill Williams, Chair of the Commission and member of the Economic Development Commission. He is also President and Chief Executive Officer of Bear Creek Corporation in Medford, which brings you, among other products, those bearing the Harry and David label. Joining him, if needed, will be Tom Costable, Senior Vice President and Manager of Operations, Sony Disc Manufacturing in Springfield, and Harriet Quote here, another commissioner, who is President of PAR International.
William, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Holman, members of the committee. I'll cover the strategic recommendations that are included in the report that you'll be receiving shortly. Our first recommendation is centered on market diversification. We encourage market diversification. The Commission stresses the continued support of existing markets as a necessary activity, as well as diversification of products that we export to those existing markets. This is in addition to exploring new markets for Oregon goods and services, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but the regions we cover are Europe, Mexico, China, and Africa. A second recommendation is to enhance Oregon's economic diversity. In order to enhance Oregon's economic diversity, the state must encourage market expansion while protecting its position in key markets, as previously stated. Oregon's
Financial and staff resources should be allocated to increase diversification of international markets for Oregon goods and services. In other words, any resources, financial or staff resources, or any additional resources in the budget, the new biennial budget should be allocated for diversification. The reason that we chose this as an important strategy to point out was when the Southeast Asian economies collapsed a few years ago, we noted that Oregon was heavily invested in the Pacific Rim countries, and specifically three or four countries. And we needed to diversify within the Pacific Rim and also around the world to minimize the risk to the state's economy. Recognizing that world, national, and state economies may change rapidly, the state should maintain a flexible approach to market development, staffing, and services. This flexible and phased approach in overseas markets would include the following steps. First, market research of targeted industries and geographic areas. Second, missions to verify the market opportunities. Third, targeted trade shows. Fourth, legislative participation and market exploration. Fifth, governor-led business development missions. Sixth, part-time contract representation in the market. Seventh, full-time contract representation. And when possible, due to the success in the market, full-time staff representation. We also noted that any market representation for the state should be coordinated between Economic Development, Department of Agriculture, Port of Portland, and the Department of Tourism. Additionally, in our recommendations for overseas trade offices, we reaffirm our recommendation to increase market development with no new full-time representative staffs or offices to be opened at this time. The offices we have are sufficient. As a matter of fact, we're looking at ways to make them more efficient by managing them better and better staffing them to meet the requirements of the market. Additionally, the opportunities in Europe, China, Mexico, and Africa should be explored during this next biennium. The second major area of recommendation was to strengthen the Oregon Office of the International Division. The Commission found that the Oregon Office was understaffed to accomplish its legislative mandate. In confirming that recommendation, we note that two new positions are needed in the office. The first is an international representation manager to coordinate the overseas offices. They do not have sufficient management oversight at this time, and as a result, it's very difficult to evaluate their performance and to recommend additional offices until we feel they're managed more closely. The second position is a trade officer for wood products and building materials. This position had been part of the division at one point and was eliminated a number of years ago. These two additional full-time equivalent positions have been included in the governor's proposed budget. However, there is no additional funding included. There is additional funding of $200,000, which was reduced from a $350,000 request to increase market development activities, travel, trade shows, research, and to help the in-state activities of the division in terms of building awareness within the state and creating opportunities for additional education on international trade. We have a policy recommendation in our biennial report. It's that the commission recommended that the state formally adopt an international trade policy, which makes the following three points explicit. First, recognizing the importance of international trade to the Oregon economy. Second, acknowledging the need for geographic and industrial diversification of international trade. And third, encouraging cooperation among state agencies, other governmental agencies, and non-government organizations to optimize the efficient and effective use of state resources. Since our recommendation of this policy, a governor's international policy statement has been drafted, with the assistance of the Economic Development Department, the Department of Agriculture, and the Port of Portland. In progress made subsequent to the publication of our report, there has been a memorandum of understanding with the Chinese Ministry of Science and Technology. The state has signed this memorandum to focus on sustainable economic development and environmental initiatives. Senator Yi played a key role in this initiative and was on hand for the signing. The memorandum appoints a China-U.S. Center for Sustainable Development, and the U.S. Secretariat, I have a little non-sequitur here, with a U.S. Secretariat for the International Sustainable Development Foundation in Oregon. The focus of these activities are on the sectors of land use planning, sustainable agriculture and rural development, sustainable forestry, environmental technology, cleaner production practices, sustainable cities, energy, marine environment, water resources, and capacity building for sustainable development. Quite a wide variety of activities that are covered by this memorandum. The Chinese Consulate General in San Francisco.
Is exporting to China our technology to be able to accomplish these things?
Partly technology, it's also services, consulting services, knowledge, education, know-how.
So one way. I'm accustomed to those types of things that are two-way, but I didn't see anything in your list that would come back the other way. So.
I may need some help from my associates here, but I believe that this is one of our key competitive advantages in terms of economic development, the sustainable development. Oregon has a reputation for being able to do that. Superior to most places as a result of some exportable commodity or knowledge, just as high tech would be or any kind of consulting service.
Senator Yi?
Organization. It's a foundation that's independent of economic development.
Yes, it is a foundation. Economic development has played a role in the evolution of the foundation. As a matter of fact, I believe the headquarters was at one time and is still planned on being in Oregon.
Yes, that's correct.
Funding source is a completely independent foundation. I mean, economic development providing staff through the foundation?
No, economic development is not providing staff. The funding, I can't answer that immediately. Maybe, is Bill here?
Excuse me, Bill Scott. I'm on the board or the advisory board of the International Sustainable Development Foundation. It was conceived within our department, and Rick Schulberg, who's a former manager within our department, had spun out from the department to start the foundation. It was begun with a grant from the Strategic Reserve Fund. It is now supported entirely by grants and contracts from other foundations and federal government agencies, and actually has had some grants from other national governments.
There's no staffing or money coming from economic development
through this
nonprofit foundation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yi, as of today, that's correct. I'm not sure if they've finished expending all the strategic reserve they've had, but that grant was, I think, at least a couple of years ago. So I think that today they're independent of state support.
So this foundation is, I don't understand, you have a memorandum of understanding with the Chinese government to cooperate, but this is separate from economic development.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yi, that's correct. The international, the agreement that the memorandum of understanding that was signed was actually signed by me, so it was the state of Oregon really representing the United States in signing the cooperation agreement. Then the agreement designates the foundation as the secretariat or the implementer, the administrative arm for the China-U.S. Sustainable Development Partnership.
A goodwill agreement.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, it was certainly a goodwill agreement, but I think it essentially what it commits both parties to is to look for opportunities to learn and particularly to help China learn how to do sustainable development. We have cooperated extensively with the International Sustainable Development Foundation and several agencies of the United States government because we see this as an opportunity to provide an entree, especially for Oregon companies, but really for companies all over the United States, to provide services and products that are associated with sustainable development. So from our point of view as the Economic Development Department, it's very much an opportunity to export goods and services from Oregon businesses.
Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate for me to ask more questions now, or shall I wait?
I'd rather wait until we get into questions and let him do his presentation.
Okay, you just tell us when.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to continue on the progress report subsequent to publishing our biannual report, the department has been notified that the through the consulate general, Chinese consulate general in San Francisco, that the implementation of this memorandum of understanding carries a very high priority in China. Work is underway in Oregon, as Bill Scott just mentioned, to move this forward. It should also be noted that from the cooperation between China and the state of Oregon on soil erosion programs, last year Oregon won a contract to sell a great quantity of grass seeds to prevent erosion on a major, I think it was a dam project, if I remember correctly. And this is one of the ways to leverage that relationship in the future. This is certainly a sustainable development sort of initiative and one of the products that comes out of that that sharing of knowledge. Additionally, there's been some developments with for an opportunity in Kyushu, Japan. Delta Airlines inaugurated a flight to Fukuoka, Japan, in October 1998. And that gave an opportunity for Oregon and Kyushu to strengthen their ties. There was a meeting, a business forum in Fukuoka with six industries from both Oregon and from Japan participating. The initial meeting has led to 10 missions to Oregon over the past 7 months, primarily involving software, tourism, and agriculture. Some companies are in the process of locating or looking for locations in Oregon, and some Oregon companies have begun business relationships with companies in Kyushu. There is a second forum to be held in Portland beginning August 31st of this year. In regard to contract representation, plans are underway to have part-time contract representation in both Mexico and China during the next biennium, and possibly Europe if there's sufficient market research performed between now and the end of the biennium to properly target our opportunities. All this, of course, depends on the outcome of the budget process and is, of course, subject to political and economic developments. In the bioscience sector, in May 1998, during the governor's business development trip to or mission to Europe, the bioscience industry representatives visited Glasgow, Scotland, Berlin, Germany, and Strasbourg, France. Some results have already been made apparent, and several promising discussions are underway. This emerging and promising industry sector needs the support it is receiving in order that it
develop into a major industry within Oregon. As a follow-up to the Africa Task Force report, the Commission has continued discussions with the Africa Task Force and is employing their services in developing market knowledge and possible strategies for entry into the market. There's nothing on the horizon immediately, but it is an emerging market and one that Oregon should be well aware of. As you may know, the department has engaged Rubicon International to do follow-up work on market assessment, including China and other markets. This new market analysis will be completed by June of this year. The China report, which has been completed, identified opportunities, some confirming our previous recommendations and some new insights. One of the things that came out of the China report that the Commission agrees with in its annual report and in its own research is that the China market will take many years to develop. It's not a market that is easily moved into and penetrated. While phase two of the report is not yet finished, which covers the department and other market assessments, preliminary indications are that it will have recommendations which will improve the focus of the international division, as well as expand and strengthen customer relationships within the state. The Commission is looking forward to these findings to help it direct its activities over the next biennium and make this a stronger department. In closing, I urge you to support the recommended budget. I thank you for your time, and I'm more than happy to entertain questions now or whenever the appropriate time is on the agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. One question I do have, and it's on page 4 of the Behind the Tab Program Services, and it has international in the white, and it shows a box for Oregon Economic Development Department International Activities. It looks like the only difference is the $500,000 difference what the governor is recommending in his revised budget versus what was in the 95-97 budget. Is that an accurate reflection?
Page 4.
Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Yes.
If I understand your question, you're mentioning a $500,000 difference.
Yes.
Right. The reason, the primary reason for the difference, there's twofold. One is the $200,000 that has been mentioned, but the other is that the request is at current service level funding, and we are not currently funded at current service level.
So you're currently not funded at the $3.1 million?
Yes, $3.1 million, but it is not, the $3.1 million is not current service level.
Okay.
So the increase basically takes us to current service level funding plus the $200,000.
Okay. So that's what the 3.6 takes you to current service level.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Plus $200,000.
Yeah.
Plus $200,000.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out where the difference was. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to guess that when you jump out into the international markets, that you have some sort of a game plan. In other words, determine what it is that these various countries may need from us before you actually go out with the game plan to go out and attract them, whether it be Central and Southwest Asia, Russia, Africa, Canada, Latin America, Asia Pacific, Europe. In the game plan, and I was interested in the mix that we've got nearly 55% of the high tech, and recognizing from the Rubicon report that some of the premises on the Chinese market this rapidly expanding middle class and their insatiable appetite for some high-tech goods. Oregon has 55% in relationship to the nationwide exports at 40%. Without divulging, and maybe I'm already on into an area that you don't want to talk about, but I assume that Oregon must be using some of this high-tech market to try and attract in Japan or in China and some of those other markets. Of course, Japan would be a prime competitor, and then we talked just about two different offices in Japan, and that's where we got ourselves with kind of a bloody nose the last round when the Japanese market went upside down on us. So I'm wondering if you could comment on a couple of things. Number one, how you target those markets, and number two, how are we going to keep a good blend in order to not get ourselves into a situation where we've got a primary Pacific Rim trading partner again.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, high-tech is one of the, I think, one of the great, or Oregon's success in high-tech is one of the great unsung stories, success stories in the state. During the late 80s and early 90s, the foreign and domestic investment in Oregon in the high-tech industry was $8 to $10 billion. I don't have the exact number. And as a result, Oregon is one of the leading producers of, as you well know, of high-tech products. That accounts for the disproportionate percent of exports from Oregon. It's a direct result of the investment in the state. What we have attempted to do, and we spent months doing in the last biennium, was to analyze foreign markets, looking at what those markets are currently importing, what Oregon currently produces, and finding out which opportunities for market penetration and market share Oregon had. It's an imperfect science because the data isn't consistent from country to country, and there's some questions about classifications. However, there were some clear indications that the match for Oregon products differs around the world. For instance, in China, the match for Oregon products could be in building materials, could be in agriculture, could be in these environmental sustainable development products and services. However, there are governmental policies, there are import and export restrictions, there are competitive issues that make it a lot less clear-cut than we would have liked to have seen it. In Europe, we found that high-tech consumer goods and less agriculture, although there was some agriculture, was where our opportunities were. We're also very surprised to find out how much our trade had grown with Mexico across the board in almost all categories. So we attempted to do that. We attempted to match Oregon products and exports with the needs of the target market, and factoring in other things like laws, tariffs, transportation costs, language and culture, et cetera, we came up with a matrix which ranked the markets. The top-ranked market, for a variety of reasons, was Europe, both in size and in match of Oregon products. The other markets weren't quite as clear-cut. China came out very high. Mexico came out very high. Africa did not come out very high. We also looked at Russia, and did we look at Brazil and Singapore, I think, were the other markets, and they scored low, relatively low. So we felt from our analysis last year and the prior year that we had a pretty good idea of where we wanted to go, where the opportunities were. Two final comments. One is that we also looked at what the emerging industries would be in the next several decades. I hesitate to say the next century, but the next several decades. And clearly, biotech, medical, pharmaceuticals, those industries were the industries that virtually every forward-thinking planner and futurist would point to as the next high-tech industry. So we felt it was very important to develop expertise there and to help the Oregon fledgling companies in those industries, as well as Oregon Health Sciences University work in those areas. The second point was that the international, even though the economy, world economy, is developing very rapidly, it's also developing a very fluid nature, and you can't tie yourself up in any single market like we have done in the past. We're committed to to offices in China, Korea, and Taiwan, and
Japan.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
China.
Oh, China, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. Have China on the mind, and in some respects, we would like to be able to match our spending in those countries with what the opportunity is. But once you have an office, it's very difficult to back out of one or to cut it back. So we do want to stress that flexibility is important and long-range thinking is important in developing the markets.
Senator Yee, did you want to follow up on your questions that you were asking earlier on Kay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You stated that you recommend no new offices overseas at this time, but you also said you would recommend part-time consulting services in China and Mexico. But you have a memorandum of understanding to represent the whole United States to develop markets for high technology, for environmental services. Is that being kind of inconsistent, that on the one hand you say no new overseas office and part-time consulting service, on the other hand you're helping a foundation to start a cooperation to develop markets for the whole United States in China? And also in the survey, Rubicon survey, and it says at many, many places that there is, China is going to be the largest consumer market in the 21st century. And in the long term, this is potential market, large potential market for Oregon exports. And then it quoted that in 1997, China spent $7.2 billion on environmental cleanup. And clearly, there's huge potential for Oregon that if we don't start doing something, explore all the opportunities now, we're going to miss a lot of opportunities. And economy is softening, and we need to double our efforts to increase our markets. So I don't understand you're not recommending a looking into setting up a China office at the time. It seems to me your policy is rather inconsistent.
I'd like to ask you a clarification that the senator asked. Do you have the authority to sign an agreement on behalf of the U.S. government that shows this memorandum of understanding, or did you sign it on behalf of the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, we signed it on behalf of the state of Oregon.
Okay, because I think the senator is indicating that you signed this on behalf of the United States government.
Yeah, representing the United States government.
No.
There's no such representation in the memorandum of understanding.
Other than the memorandum, it says U.S. and China. And I was informed that they are going to represent all of the United States in cooperation in helping with environmental cleanup.
Mr. Scott. Mr. Chairman, in essence, the agreement formally only represents the state of Oregon. However, it's within the context that the state of Oregon, through the International Sustainable Development Foundation, will in effect provide a point of contact that through which
companies anywhere in the United States or parties anywhere in the United States can interact with opportunities in China. This agreement went through many iterations because of the sensitive nature of the diplomatic relations between the United States and China at the time of the premier's visit, etc. We were encouraged by the federal government to enter into this, but it is formally strictly an agreement between the state of Oregon and the People's Republic.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
My point really is, why don't we concentrate our efforts to help Oregon, and the potential is there, and I don't understand they're not recommending a full-time consulting service leading to a full-time office in China to help Oregon businesses, and the potential clearly is there, that is stated in the Rubicon survey that was done and published in April.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, if I can take a stab at answering part of this. In regard to sustainable development, I think this is, like biotechnology, one of the key strategies for the state in emerging industries for the next century. The strategy, as I understand it, or in part as I understand it, is to bring this expertise to Oregon as a center for sustainable development and environmental science. This institute is multinational. It brings a lot of expertise from around the world to Oregon, which builds Oregon citizens' skill sets and industry. It provides both as a reference and a teaching center. There are opportunities for tie-ins with universities, both the University of Oregon and Oregon State, and I'm sure that with some of the other universities around the state. There is a theory in economics called industry clustering. One of the things that we have discussed, and of course we have a small budget, we can't pretend that we can cluster industries, but one of the things we have discussed is what industries would you like to see seated in the state's economy so that there would be a cluster of related industries around it. Certainly you want to be in emerging industries like environmental science and sustainable development and biotechnology. So the idea behind the sustainable development strategy, I think, is sound, and it will, in the long run, be very, very healthy for Oregon and its economy. In terms of China being the the largest consumer economy in the 21st century, that's very possible. I couldn't argue with that, but it's not right now. And what we need to do is match our investment as a state with the potential for return. And there are greater potentials for return given today's economic performances in various regions of the world, in China. It's a strong economy. It's a growing economy. We certainly all wish it success, but we also have to be realistic about how we spread our limited resources. And finally, when it comes to an office, a full-time office is, of course, an option and one that may very well come out over the course of this biennium as we take a look at it. Some of the issues we face, though, in a full-time office is, of course, where do we put it? China has 6 or 7 major economic regions. There are language and cultural and legal differences between those regions. Shanghai is a good candidate, as is Hong Kong, as are some other cities. One of the considerations we have when we place an office is how to get the greatest value from that office for the state, and that means tying it in with agriculture, the ports of Portland, and if possible with tourism, and tourism has shown very little interest at this point in China for a variety of reasons. So who shares the office with us, if anybody can share the office with us, and where we would place it are additional considerations when we talk about a full-time office versus a part-time office, either under contract or with staff.
Okay.
Senator Lennon.
Yes, I'd like to have a copy of the MOU signed by the state, and also that the Sustainable Economic Development Office here, is that part of the APAC that we have to do with it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, we will certainly get everyone a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding. And with regard to the ignorant question, the International Sustainable Development Foundation is the umbrella organization over the APEC that you have mentioned.
Okay. Representative Passage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, Mr. Williams, since you're involved in the agricultural business, I'm just concerned that when I'm looking at some of these things about the international division, talking about more organ companies with will export higher value products and things like that, I think it's great that we're working on emerging markets and biotech kinds of markets, but I'm concerned with, and maybe you could reflect a little bit upon what's happening with the existing organ markets that we have currently. We're not going to have probably biotech in Eastern or Southern Oregon at any point in the near future. We're going to probably continue to concentrate on agricultural and forest products types of things, maybe metals industries and those kinds of items. How is the commission set up to deal with continuing to aid companies like yours and others who are in those fields to maintain jobs in those parts of the state that don't necessarily have the support of an Oregon State or University of Oregon or Oregon Health Sciences University to sustain their economy?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, the division works as closely as possible with the Department of Agriculture in coordinating activities on agricultural products as well as value-added agricultural products. The export laws surrounding agricultural products, as you know, are difficult and varied. There's no uniformity. Each country, rightly so, feels like it should be able to feed its citizenry without importing food. As a result, there are protectionist barriers, there are high tariffs, there are phytosanitary issues that all companies face. I'm not an expert in grain export, but I do know that when the Southeast Asian economy had its problems, there was a fallout in our exports, our grain exports. And to the extent that there's any opportunity to assist in that, I'm confident that the division and the department have done that, but their input, I think, is limited.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Let me just follow along with Representative Passage in that line of thinking. When you consider the biotech and the potential for the bioengineering, we're dealing with a nation not only with 1.2 billion people, but also with literally billions of acres of forest and tens of billions of acres of grasslands. Is there some potential that we could export technology to China for the purpose of genetically altering in China and bringing rootstock, so to speak, back from China using their substantial resources of both labor and the grasslands and forestlands and so forth? In other words, could we make a combination of exchange, and that's, I think, what Senator Deuce was kind of referring to, is there's got to be some quid pro quo back and forth, and could we exchange where they have the rather substantial labor pool and a high unemployment rate, incidentally, a substantial labor pool and substantial resource in the land. Is there something there that we could bring back to help rural organs industry and bioengineering in that fashion?
Ms. Williams or Mr. Sutz, is he going to...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I think I'm going to pass on that one. It's a little outside my area of expertise.
Mr. Bates?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Tom Costigan speak to that.
Chair, Senator Butler, my name is Tom Costigan. I'm Senior Vice President of Operations for Sony Corporation. I run the Western Regional Operations for our music and hardware division. I can answer the question or maybe help provide a little insight on technology and trade to China. We've been involved with that as a company for over 20 years. I've personally been involved with it for the last 16 years. And while I'd like to speak at this particular point representing larger industries, not the smaller, medium-sized companies in the state of Oregon, I agree with Senator Yi and her concerns that China is an emerging market, and I also believe that this memorandum that you supported, and I thank you on a personal basis for that, is that it's the right approach at this time. China is a difficult market for smaller companies to break into. As a larger company with the technology interest and, more importantly, technology exchange type information, and that protection of intellectual property. What we have not been able to come to grips with the majority of companies in China, as well as with the government, is the enforcement side of intellectual property. When you look at that for smaller and medium-sized companies in our state, it's almost a disaster. It takes years to get that type of development to work. I, for one, believe that we have to start and we have to push, but it's not a full-force push at this time because of our limited funding. On our side, we own the intellectual property to a piece that's very current called Star Wars. In conjunction with Lucasfilms, what we found out is 3 days afterwards, the majority of the pirated product, what I'm not proud to say, is coming out of the China market. We can't stop that at this time. For us, it's a huge, huge loss. It'll amount to several hundred million dollars in revenue. When you equate that to small and medium-sized companies in the state, it becomes one of a very detrimental effect. So by way of example, I don't know if that answers the question, but it kind of provides a little bit of insight and some light on. I share the concerns that the marketplace is very large in China. We have a lot to offer as a state, both inward and outward investments, but we simply do not have the international understanding and, more importantly, the enforcement side of gaining that revenue stream back for our Oregon companies. As a Japanese multinational, I'm representing a Japanese multinational in the U.S. marketplace. One of the things that we looked at, quite frankly, the reason that we invested heavily in the state of Oregon were the opportunities that we afford here. Our education system, our workforce, and really the opportunities to take smaller companies into a world market with us. It works for a bunch of reasons, but it's working on a smaller scale and a much slower pace.
Chair?
Yes. Representative Butler.
Thank you. I take it that means that if we, if for instance, we're having a problem with some disease in our filbert trees, and Oregon is famous for its filbert trees, as is a portion of Germany and Europe. So if we were to export the technology to plus some filbert rootstock and have those trees perhaps genetically altered or something that's done genetically there, what we're saying is that they could just as soon become the third producer of filberts worldwide and say, to hell with you, basically. We don't want to ship anything back to you except the grown filbert nuts in. Is that basically where we're coming? Because there's the disability and so forth, what you're saying is that they may not honor the agreements that we make with them.
Mr. Chair, President Butler, our experience again has shown that the enforcement side just isn't there full force yet. Again, as a business person, the type of arrangement that one would set and the ones that we look at, you obviously try to prevent that. But the enforcement side is not there yet. I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. As China enters the world trade market, don't you think this is the enforcement, the standards, the regulations will all be monitored by the World Trade Organization? I know they're not a member yet, but I know that it's pretty sure they will be, well, I shouldn't say pretty sure, but it is expected that they will be admitted this fall or this winter because the American businesses are urging the admittance. Do you think that will be resolved as they become a member?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yi, what we understand from our Washington contacts is that it'll probably be another year, year and a half before they become a member. I believe right now, again, from our Washington's our attorney, that the majority of concerns are the amount of revenue that's being generated and the lack of infrastructure to support a consistent uniform basis in China. But I do believe that there's a strong push by the central government, sorry, Chinese government, to achieve that status. They recognize their ability, their inability to export products being made on a legal basis. And it's one that, quite frankly, everyone will generate more revenue and make more profit if they become it.
Okay, further questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple more questions for Mr. Williams, if I might.
Sure.
You talked about return on investment, and you use that as a criteria to recommend overseas office establishment of office or not. Can you give us what kind of return on investment do we have in our Japan office, our Taiwan office, and our consulting service with Korea? Can you provide that? Because I see you're spending about $1 million in Japan with how many FTE? Four FTE?
I believe it's four.
Yes, with four FTE. And what kind of return in investment do you have for each overseas office? And also, what is your estimated return on investment for China that gives you the decision not to recommend that? Could you give us those information, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yi, I think the answer to that is twofold. First, the return on investment that we've tried to pin down on any of the foreign offices has been in trade level, the amount of trade back and forth. We've tried to get a secondary measure on that market's investment back in Oregon, and it was very difficult to get our hands around, but it is an important factor. So when we look at the investment in Japan, we look at the amount of international trade between the two countries, and we look at the foreign investment in Oregon. The same with Korea and Taiwan, to some extent. Those are major trade partners for the state. They eclipse the amount of trade that the state does with China at this point. I think the second part of this is that this is an imprecise science in looking at the return on investment. So I wouldn't say that we have the final answer by looking at the amount of trade. One of the things that you have to look at in making any investment is what your expected return is. So what would be the incremental trade that you would have if you had an office there versus not having an office there? When we looked at that, what we came up with was if you're underrepresented in a mature market, or if you're underrepresented in a market that has a trade pattern, a trade trend that is very favorable, then those would be better places to put scarce resources than in a market that had a trade trend that was flatter or where you thought that the return was going to be more long-term. That's not to say, and I guess the caveat to this whole analysis, is it's not to say that we shouldn't have an office in China and we shouldn't have an office in some place in Europe or a couple places in Europe and in Mexico and in Africa and maybe Brazil. We should have offices every place if we had unlimited resources. What we've done is gone back in the department's budget history for this decade, and the high water mark in the budget history was 91, 92 at about 3.65 million. And since then, the budgets have been cut. We're not at current service levels. We've asked for an increase this time. We didn't get the full increase in the governor's recommended budget. We, of course, urge you to give us what increase you can. I think if we had unlimited financial resources, certainly we would take a different view. But we're dealing with scarce resources, so we have to make the best decisions that we can, given the facts that we have at our disposal.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I didn't get the answer I was asking for. I think you said based on the information on return on investment, you are recommending not to invest in an overseas office in China at this time. So I'm asking for what kind of information do you have regarding return on investment in your overseas office now in Japan, in Taiwan, in Korea, and what kind of return on investment do you estimate in China that caused you not to recommend one? Could I have that information? Besides, I also like to know what is required information by statute. How many jobs do you create in each program? What is the cost per job? What is the return in investment? And what is the benefit to our community because of this program? I would like to know, what do you use in making your judgment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, there are many ways to measure return on investment. Of course, if you're a business, you measure return on investment in dollars. It's very difficult to measure return on investment in a state government in dollars. Therefore, the default measurement for the Economic Development Commission or Economic Development Department was in jobs, and the inference being if there were more jobs, there were more taxes collected by the state. That went into the general fund, and there would therefore be more services and more infrastructure available within the state government. We have not been able to do anything but a very broad relationship between jobs and taxes, but we've made average estimates in the Economic Development Department. When it comes to international trade, and you're dealing with $3 to $3.5 million on a $10 billion, $3 to $3.5 billion by annum on a $10 billion export economy, and trying to relate that down to a job in that economy is virtually impossible. That's why we took a very macro measure of international trade between the two countries. We couldn't get it down to dollars. Neither can the Economic Development Department get it down to dollars on their more direct investments in their larger budget. We couldn't get it down to jobs because those jobs are fleeting sometimes because they're a one contract or a two contract deal, and they're not reported clearly. They're not reported in any kind of statistical sense. So what we've done is take trade between the two countries, and that has been our indicator. What we did was we extrapolated into the future what we thought the trade trends would be given the market size, the goods that those countries were importing, the goods that Oregon exported, and the direct investment in Oregon's economy that the country could put forward. One of the places that China came up grossly inferior to other markets was in investment in Oregon. There was little evidence that China could invest anything within the state. That was a consideration. It wasn't a deciding point in terms of the ranking, but it was a consideration. Virtually every other economy, short of Africa, Russia, I can't remember the third one, Brazil, was able to invest in the Oregon economy. And that would be another measure, although we didn't employ it. I don't have a better answer than that, and I don't think there is a better answer than that. We have examined other states, international trade divisions, departments, statistics. Nobody comes up with anything better than the trade levels and the direct investment in the state's economy.
So, one more question.
Yeah.
So you have no information before you make your decision. My next question,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, you're asking for two new positions, one managerial for the International Trade Division and one for wood product marketing. Now, according to your 1998 export report, Japan has reduced our Oregon export to Japan has reduced 12.6%. Our export to Taiwan has reduced 31.7%. Now, in normal business and home management, when the income is reduced, you reduce your expenses. So why are you asking for increased staff when the export sales is reduced? I don't understand the logic. Since me, if business has reduction in sales, you reduce your expenditures in personnel, you increase your, try to increase your productivity. So why do you increase your staff? And what are you doing to increase productivity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, I think there were three questions there. There was one around having information. We have a great deal of information available to us. I believe you've had access to all of it. We try to use all of the
information. Not all of it. I have a few that I asked for. I don't have all of it yet.
Forgive me. Certainly you have a right to access to all of it, and we'd be glad to provide it to you. We try to use all of that information in our decision-making, and we don't try to build a case one way or the other. We let the facts speak for themselves. And when we do statistical analysis, when we do financial measures, when we do any kind of numeric weighting of the various factors, it comes up pretty clear, and we've tried it two or three different ways, that the markets have certain priorities. And we've tried to express those priorities in our report. Europe, Mexico, China, Africa came up ahead of some of the other markets. Each one of the markets that we currently are in, and we excused Japan from our analysis, but we did look at Taiwan and Korea, came up ahead of the four markets that we have identified for further exploration. So where we have offices or where we have representation, our trade patterns and our investment patterns are clearly superior to where we are attempting to explore the market. The second question, I believe, was around reduced expenditures. When our trade with a country is down, as it was in Japan when their economy was set back, or Korea 2 years ago when their economy was set back, of course, the proper business reaction would be to reduce the investment in the country. It's unfortunate, or maybe it is fortunate, that states and governments don't operate like businesses. They take a longer-term view. There's less flexibility in being able to reduce your expenses, and they have a lot of symbolic meaning behind them. Over time, I think you can adjust to the market reality, and we've done that in Japan. As Mr. Banks was pointing out to me, although we had 4.5 positions, I believe, in Japan, we're down to 3, and we're re-engineering that staff and the roles and responsibilities of the staff to see if we can get by with 3 or 3.5 in the future. And we have taken several hundred thousands of dollars out of that office's budget over the last biennium, and we're still pursuing other opportunities there.
Okay. We're going to have to cut this kind of short, Bill, because we have some other witnesses that need to testify.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a comment.
Okay.
The comment is, if you have the export data before you when you make your decision, China's Oregon's export to China increased by 63.4% in last year compared to all the decreases. So I think that you should review this information. And also, can you give us information regarding the FTE in the different offices? I have 4 for Japan, 2 for Taiwan, and I would like this information for us.
Yes, Representative Passage.
I just have one. I don't know if it's a quick question or not, based upon Mr. Costable comment. I realize that there's some significant thing involved with a high-tech company that did some international trade. I realize that there's some problems with knockoffs and other things in China and protecting your own technology and other things. But I guess my question is when allocating your trade offices and putting all those into the equation and determining where you're going to place staff, I also know that China is one of the most difficult markets to get into for a company based upon the laws and the trade restrictions and regulations surrounding surrounding trade with China. And I'm one, and, you know, while the Japanese market may be tougher to access, maybe sometimes at the consumer level, I think that, you know, Korea is a reasonably easy market to access, as is Taiwan. If we're looking at trying to help Oregon businesses, I think China is a good market, but my concern is are you factoring in also what kind of the trade barriers are and how you can add expertise to Oregon companies when you're determining these trade-offs? Because China is a very, very difficult market to access just in terms of the rules and regulations and how to access that market. So I guess that would be my first question. My second question is, if part of the concern is about the protection on technology and those kinds of things, what can we do as Oregon to promote any of that or to promote any of those protections? I mean, it's a kind of more federal and international protection, and I don't think that we can ignore a market. I'd rather have a toehold in an emerging market and get people in there until we can work something out rather than wait till a later point in time. I would argue from a small electronic standpoint that we worry about being gobbled up by big multinationals. So I guess that those are my two questions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, Senator Yee. Senator Yee, we'll get you the FTE numbers. I don't have them at hand. Mr. Banks has them. To address Representative Patridge's questions, last year we were required by statute to report to the Emergency Board on opening an office in China. We spent approximately 10 months analyzing it. We looked at a range of variables. We started out with 20 variables. We narrowed it down to 14 variables. We looked across 8 or 9 markets. The analysis, the quantitative part of that analysis, which looked at laws, language, culture, copyright, trademark protection, transportation costs, foreign investment in Oregon, a whole range. You have a flavor of it from that sampling. The answer is clearly, Europe offers the best opportunity for Oregon, for ease of entry, for understanding the legal environment. It's only one time zone farther away than the closest time zone in China and Japan. It's in some ways closer than the farthest time zone in China. Additionally, Mexico showed up high. South Africa as a country, South Africa as a region, showed up as emerging and high, and a lot depends there on how you view that market long term. So from that analysis, we came up with a recommendation, recommended we don't open a full-time office in China. That report was rejected by the Emergency Board. It is still resident someplace, I'm sure, in the government apparatus, if you'd care to analyze it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Duke, do you have a question?
Representative Patrick handled it pretty well. I also, just skimming this report, came to the conclusion, I didn't mean skimming, but came to the conclusion that it was as much what it would take to help companies overcome the trade barriers and anything else. The rest of the report sounds like we ought to be over there and we ought to be helping companies and jobs. But again and again, it came back to the trade barriers. But I'm not sure what your emphasis is in helping companies, but my impression was that helping them overcome trade barriers was not an emphasis of the Oregon International Division.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, that's correct. Our effectiveness in overcoming trade barriers is limited. Our effectiveness in navigating them is somewhat better, but not superior. We do focus on small and medium-sized Oregon businesses. They are the least prepared to operate in cultures where the legal system is different, languages are different. It creates some problems.
Okay. Senator Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, you mentioned just a moment ago that the investment has to do with the trade level of each country. And I said correctly, you stated that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lim, it has to do with the current trade levels and potential trade levels given the economies. Sometimes the statistics are need to be looked at in raw numbers. Percent increase in trade is one number. A absolute number of dollars is a different number. So if you're taking a
large percent of a small base, it may not mean the same thing as an increase, a smaller percentage increase on a larger base. And the when you look at things like middle class and average income, you have to put those into U.S. dollars. A middle class in some countries is not, does not have the equivalent discretionary income as a middle class in other countries.
Mr. Chair, if you could provide me the criteria why we have to invest $900,000 in Japan, and then the Taiwan office from $218,000 to going up $350,000, and the Korea $150,000. What's the scientific method allocating the fund for each country? What's the basis on it? Is there the trade volume? I couldn't understand with my logic. According to the volume, the Korea is the number one at this time, but it's the lowest in funding. And then certainly I agree with the Senator May Yi, there's a great potential in China. If not now, in the future, I think we need to invest at this time. And then, but I don't see any budgeting yet, a budget proposal at all. I feel like the International Trade Commission just is drifting without vision in the future. That just is trying to keep up just the status quo at this time. And then I appreciate that the governor that here, she founded the International Trade Office throughout the Asia. That was one of the best investments we have in our state. And then in this coming new millennium, we need to look at the way we can expand the trade. Just looking for the Africa and China, I don't think it's good enough. I don't see any clear vision. And in this coming millennium, how we are going to move into this more competitive world.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yan Palin, in terms of the question around investment rationale, to refresh everyone's memory, those offices were in place before the International Trade Committee was formed, and the International Trade Committee became the International Trade Commission. Actually, I believe that you're under your leadership. The expenditures in those countries were set sometime in the distant past. I'm gonna disclaim any knowledge of how they were set. We do agree with you that we are spending too much money in Japan. We are doing some sort of downsizing there. We have changed our office location. We have one gentleman is retired, and I think there's been one resignation. So we have been downsizing that office. Hopefully we can bring it more in line with what the opportunities are and what the trade patterns show. In terms of Taiwan, Taiwan is really, in many cases, an entry point into China, along as is Hong Kong. It's a little bit misleading, I think, to look at Taiwan as a single entity. There's lots of dynamics between China and Taiwan, and I think the investment in the office there is justified. In Korea, of course, we have a smaller expenditure. We have more economies there for a variety of reasons. Korea may, in some respects, be a model for what we should be doing in other countries in terms of really leveraging our investment. The question about vision, I think, is a legitimate question. We've been trying to formulate a vision. As I'm sure you're aware, there's a lot of voices that speak advocating a lot of different positions. We've tried to take an objective look at it. There are 9 members of our commission from the business community. I don't think anyone went in with any particular bias, and we've tried to sort this out and rationalize what looked like a what had been a strategy that had emerged over time, that had built on itself rather than been thought out in the beginning. Our vision is that the state of Oregon should have some level of representation in each one of the major markets in the world. That would be Europe, South America, certainly Asia to a greater extent than the other regions. Africa, as it emerges, our vision would be that we would spend the state's money wisely. We haven't felt like we were in a position to do that because there was not a lot of data and there had not been a lot of work done up until now. I'm thankful that we had a chance to analyze the China office and the other office alternatives, the last biennium. I'm happy that we're getting a new report from Rubicon, because I think we can build on that. And during the next biennium, I think you'll see a much clearer vision, and you'll see the commission step up and request funding for expanded presence of the state of Oregon and many regions around the world. But I will reinforce, we do believe that flexibility is best, and that slow is best, and rather than jumping in with a 4 or 5 person office as we have done in some markets and then try to back out of it.
Yes, Senator Lim, I'll let you ask the question, but I'd remind the members we have 3 other people here that are from out of town. They need to testify.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Sure. And very much for the answer you have. I understand you have a study will be come out sometime in June. And what happened, the study come out in June? Yeah, this is the time to move into the China or Africa. Then how we are going to react without the proposal, any funding at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lim, we have funding for market exploration in this budget request that we gave to the governor. There is some contractual money that we had earmarked for Europe and some for Mexico, because those were the 2 primary markets, and we thought that was all we could manage. We are certainly not against having some sort of contract representation in China. We think that would be a wise thing to do. That would require funding over and above what we have requested if we were to do Europe and Mexico, which we think are priority markets.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Lauren. We have now Senator Gordley, along with a couple other individuals, Bernie Foster and Harold Williams. Would you all come forward, please? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I would like to make, for the record, my name is Abel Gordley, representing Senate District 10, which includes neighborhoods in southeast and northeast Portland, also includes Portland International Airport. Mr. Chair, by way of some brief introductory remarks, before I turn this over to Mr. Foster and Mr. Williams, I would like to say on the record that I'm in very strong support of the economic development budget at the governor's level. I also had the opportunity to hear some of the presentation of the international division, and want to also support the work that is going forward through that division. But with that said, I will also share with you that we have some remarkable opportunities to increase our, to enter a trade relationship with 2 African nations that have indicated that they want to do trade with Oregon, and those 2 nations are Ghana and Zambia. Those governments have already contacted us and said that they want to explore a trade relationship with Oregon. What I want to share with you is that this is a relationship that we've got to put on a faster track. I'm very appreciative of the work that's already going forward through the International Division and through the with the support of the Africa Task Force, which produced a report to help the division figure out where to target its trade efforts. But we've got to we have the opportunity to make our efforts even more aggressive. The only other thing I would say in conclusion is that I'm in very strong support of the Economic Development Department's work, having participated on the Interim Work Group on Economic Development, supportive of the work that's going forward through the International Division, supportive of the focus that we now have on urban and distressed communities. But there are a couple of voices that you need to hear from this morning. These are both two very successful Oregon businessmen whose work is, some of the work is primarily in northeast Portland. They have a particular view of economic development activity and opportunities in our state that we want you to hear about. Again, these are individuals who are here in support of the state's economic development focus, but have some particular issues and concerns for you to hear. And I appreciate this opportunity, and we'll be leaving you to go to another meeting with the governor.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, both of you.
Good morning, Senator, Mr. Chairman, Senators, Representative. Let me first of all say my name is Bernie Foster. My business is at 415 North Kingsworth, Portland, Oregon, a little over 14 years. First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to have the opportunity to be here this morning. I want to also thank Senator Gorley for her work, and also our Senator Ferriola for his work, which I felt was very, very, very important. I want to say that I really feel that you guys are on the right track. I particularly want to thank him for his work in merging the urban areas, in particular with the urban areas as well, and the rural. Far too often I feel that we've sort of been pitted against each other, and I want to commend you for the work that you've done in bridging this gap. My testimony today is fairly brief. It won't take a lot of your time, but I want to just share something with you I think is extremely important. On January 23rd, 1999, a report from the Oregon Employment Department portrayed the Northeast Portland as a unique regional within Multnomah County and the city of Portland. The area is characterized by a large minority population and relative to high unemployment and poverty. Although North and Northeast Portland has been improving in unemployment and poverty rates since 1990, It does provide clear evidence that all parts of the booming Portland metropolitan area have shared equally in the regional growth. Unemployment rates were relatively high in North and Northeast Portland, although they have declined since 1990. In 1990, the area unemployment rate exceeded 10%, compared to 5.8% for the whole of Multnomah County. By 1996, the unemployment rate in Northeast Portland had declined to 6%, considerably below the 1990 census figures, but still exceeds the 4.2 estimated for Multnomah County. More than 40% of the residents of North and Northeast Portland were employed in the service area, including business, repair services, professional, and relative and other services. The retail trade sector was the second largest employer of North and Northeast Portland residents. Also, a large portion of the North and Northeast Portland residents works in transportation, communication, which is I'm in as well, and utility district. I'm here today to support the budget. However, there are two concerns I have. The OED department has service must be asked some questions before the budget is passed. It is my understanding that the minority business assistance funds are being increased in the Oregon Economic Department budget, which you think is important. Funding previously allocated for minority business assistance were used to create and coaching program. They were effective and helpful. More important, they are needed. But it should not stop there. Although minority business should be increased throughout the whole budget, because the share given to minority business is small compared to the percentage of minority business in Oregon. Startup business and existing business are vital to Oregon growth. 80% of small business in Oregon employ 20 or less employees. 80%. Both are needed more funding in order to help them become viable and successful. Therefore, increasing the quality of life for all Oregon. Consider the increase in budget proposal. What is the strategy in regard to minority businesses? Assistance should be accessible to minority neighborhoods, not in isolated areas. An office should be established in the North and Northeast Portland to provide business assistance with staffing. This is substantial in your own department documents. It is one thing to pass the budget, but it's also to declare it publicly. At this point, the ODD have, anyone else have declared what they're going to do. And to me, about six or seven things that need to be addressed. Number one, what tools is the department coming up with to ensure resources of the budget to be focused in the district area, both rural and urban? Number two, they need to work with community leadership where the needs are the greatest. It's far too easy for someone in Salem to decide our destiny with maps and compasses to decide where the problems are. Three, funding should go to organizations like Albany Community Bank, CH2A, African Chamber of Commerce, and other business entities. Not nonprofit organizations that supposedly represent business firms. And I just want to say this too, that far too often in my community, we would take the nonprofit organization and substitute them for economic growth. I don't think you would do that. You would not go United Way for business in Portland. We would go to the business community. And far too often they have large community. OD should represent and work with non-traditional partners to foster economic return within our community. ODD should work with training centers, skill centers, and printing and technological centers that are directly connected to businesses. Just how much our ODD entire budget is going to North and North Portland in the rural areas. In other words, what percent of the budget is going to economic development in these areas? I believe for ODD to work effectively, there should be a written commitment to address these concerns before the budget is passed. In closing, I would say, and I mean it's just no disrespect, but in closing, the government supports low-income programs that support the business black community. However, many have ignored any programs supporting viable business in the black community. The result is no government support for economic stability within the black community for businesses. Along government programs and low-income programs, many will dust off their hands as if they've done their part. However, until the will of commerce is made whole, there will continue to be a poverty as we see in every day, the poverty failing. This affects the area of education, youth, loan, physical health, and the age. I believe this second thing will help in the long run if properly addressed, given these concerns I have addressed in my earlier remarks. I want to thank you for your time and your concerns, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Foster, welcome. I might announce here that some of the senators do have to leave here the floor station, and so we're probably subject to a call, so we might keep our comments if we can brief. I apologize to you, but unfortunately the clock doesn't respect our committee meeting sometimes.
Did we get a copy of the written comments as well?
Yes.
Senator Hannon, members of the committee, my name is Harold Williams. I'm president of CH2A and Associates, and I'm also a member of the board of directors for Portland Community College. My concerns are very basic, and I use the example of you here on the committee, and I deal with from the standpoint of international relations and how we could deal with that market. Mr. Foster and I were just in Ghana, and they are very interested in doing business with Oregon. We were with the vice president of Ghana and all of the representatives of the region. We were in Accra and Cape Coast and establishing business with this state. We were amazed at the kind of treatment we got from Oregon. They know more about us than we knew about Ghana. We had the red carpet treatment. A fellow like me from a small business, I said, wow, you know, Oregon is getting this kind of treatment. And yet, in our state, we probably don't know that they exist hardly. And it's a wide open array of opportunities to deal with Ghana and other countries that we don't normally deal with in trade relations. But let me deal with this real quickly as we deal with the African-American community. Senator Duke is from the coast. Len is from Gresham. He's from Albany. Tuchab is from Beaverton. You're from Ashland. Back from Portland. You have all particular different interests. It's like international relations.
You are for the whole of the state, but you have a particular interest with your particular region. We as African Americans are for the whole of the state in economic development, but we have a unique feel for our particular community. You cannot say dismiss what we bring to the table. All of us are not in poverty. That is the only real slant that we have with some of the attention that's given to economic development as it deals with the African American community. One of the greatest crimes that an African American male that can commit, and females in general, and that crime is this. The greatest crime that we can commit in society is to be legitimate. If we are down and out, there's always some nonprofit program to get us out of prison, to help us get us back on the feet. But if we are legitimate, to do it the right way, break our butts to make sure we take care of business, we get no support. No financial assistance for any broad perspective. And we're saying, you come in here every legislative session. You fight for the economic development growth of this state. But make very clear, you make it very clear, you're going here to fight for your particular area to ensure that it gets economic development. We are here for the same reason. We are very supportive of the Economic Development Department and the people that work in it. They do a lot of good work. But our voice has a little different slant. We haven't had enough to address our particular needs. We are not down and out. We are very well educated. We've been successful. I've been in business for 15 years, have almost no support. Can you imagine existing without credit lines, existing without funds from the federal government? We have to do that all the time to make sure we have a voice. Everybody in Portland comes to us for assistance. We have to come and testify and fight for other people. But there's no real hard dollars coming to us to assist in educating our people that's coming, our staff. We funded our students to send them away from the state to be educated and come back to business. What are we doing to attract African-American business to stay here, to feel a part of it? There's no economic substance on a broad base. There's beginning efforts for economic development, but we're asking you to give them support so they can expand it, not only locally, but internationally. As you would speak for your particular areas, you have a different unique area for Ashland. We have a different unique area for Northeast Portland. In particular, there's a difference in doing the Watusi and being the Watusi. And in being a part of that, we want to make it very clear that this is not a dance. This is not a play. This is the real deal for us, and we take it very serious. And we hope that you look at us on the stage of economic development as being true business persons and not here for a poverty program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments by committee members? I think your point certainly is well taken. And that's what this committee is certainly trying to do, is reflect how do we benefit Oregonians. Not black or white, yellow, green, not Democrat, Republican, or anybody else, but we're saying we're all in this together. Even Ashland suffers the same consequences that you suffer in the urban area by not recognizing in the contributions of the African-American community. So we're not without fault, and we all share that responsibility together. And I can assure you that I may be from Ashland, but I care deeply what happens to my state.
What we need from you, particularly at this point in the session, is some specifics. We have a budget in front of us, and you're asking for some things in that budget, but we need some specifics so that, I mean, this budget will move fairly soon, I assume, and if we need to make adjustments in this to help you accomplish where you're going, then we need to know what that is, because on our own, we're probably not going to get there.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Senator for coming over to testify, to give us a new vision and then a new insight. I do appreciate that. But particularly today's budget is an international trade budget. I think you mentioned overall the economic issue, the particular reason. I do appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Mr. Scott, do you have anybody else to finish up on the day, or Mr. Andrews, want to speak?
Can I do something not for the day, but Bill, when you come back, I assume we'll all be back together again. Could you bring us sort of a summary of what you're planning to do to help us get into this trade relationship with Ghana and Zambia over the next 2 years? I mean, I don't need it now, but just if you could bring that. I don't see anything on this page here for South Africa, and I'm assuming that we must be pursuing something if we have countries out there saying we want to. So just if you could bring that back.
Nick, next week, on the 10th of June, we're going to be hearing in a public session with Bill Bessender Yee.
On the 10th is Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Okay, excuse me. Anyway, it's next week, and it deals with establishing the trade office in Shanghai. There is nothing in this proposed budget currently at this time dealing with a trade office for Africa that I'm aware of.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Chair, trade office is what's needed. It just seems to me if you have two countries who don't have a lot of trade barriers who say to us we're interested, that we would respond favorably, and perhaps that means some funding in order to be able for the agency to do that.
Certainly Mr. Scott can bring back a response to that question.
Yeah. Or even maybe get it to me before that so that I can see if I need to
send
you proposal. Thank you. I think we emphasize upon we like information on making judgments on overseas office. So we would appreciate information on what I ask for, the job, cost per job, return on investment for each office, and the proposed office, and some vision and plans for promoting trade opportunities.
All right, thank you. Mr. Andrews, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Bruce Andrews, Port of Portland. We're here to support the International Division of the Budget. We believe, obviously, in a cooperation that we've had with the Department of Agriculture and EDD. It's been an important partnership, really, to go out and explore the boundaries of Oregon business overseas. In response to the overseas offices, the port's taken on the view of, obviously, where there's activity, we're going to have representation to the point where we can foster those linkages and those transportation linkages as efficiently and as cheaply as we possibly can. We also believe that China is a growing market and one that we're starting to pay a lot more attention to. And how we have started to look at our staffing needs is really on a contractual basis. We have a shared office with OEDD in the state and the Korean, and as well as in Japan. But in terms of Taiwan and in terms of Hong Kong, we use independent shipping contractors that have multi-ability to go out through a broader area. And that helps us so we can understand what those market access points are really going to be. In the example of China, there's six major ports and two new ones that are under development. So we're trying to spend as much time understanding exactly which one of those ports is really going to be significant for us. We actually think that Shanghai offers, in the long term, probably the best opportunity. But in the future, until we have a really, really strong understanding, we're going to use those contract employees and shipping line contractors as much as we possibly can to develop those direct linkages. With that, we think that the cooperation between the Economic Development Department, the Department of Agriculture, and the Port of Portland, and even the City of Portland on a number of projects, whether it's in Asia, Europe, or even in Africa, because when I was head of the Department of Agriculture, we made some forays into South Africa with the understanding that there is some potential markets there, but we do have some transportation linkage problems that we need to overcome. So between EDD staff and our staff and ag staff, we think that we're trying to work at this as holistically as we possibly can. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Chairman, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lem.
And do you share the office in Japan and Korea with the trade office?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Lem. In Korea, we actually even share the employees where we pay. In fact, you have to take EDD's number in Korea and double it because we actually pay another half of that on the other side of it.
On top of what we
exactly. In Japan, we co-locate in the same office where we share half the rental space, but we have our own two employees in Tokyo.
On the office share, not the employee.
Not the employee.
Thank you. Okay. Further questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? If not, Mr. Scott, do you want to set forth our agenda for tomorrow?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would point out that there were representatives of three industry associations here who had intended to testify in the International Division budget, and I guess they had made an assumption that they weren't going to get that opportunity and have left. I think we'll maybe follow up with you and make a list of the things we've been asked for today and make a decision about whether we come, how much we come back to international trade and whether we should bring them again. We do have a schedule. Has that been passed out, or do you want to?
At first.
Oh, okay. Apparently we have a schedule that's in the invite. I'll just talk about tomorrow. Not get any further than that. Tomorrow we plan to present the Arts Commission and the Tourism Commission budgets for the committee.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, come before our committee. We're adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow.